All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Crimecast. Thank you so much for being so patient with me, as with midterm season, I'm sure it was hard on everyone like it was for me. That being said, before we go into today's topic, I just want to say that this show will now be on a bi-weekly system. So, every other Tuesday, starting with this one, there will be a new episode. Also, please feel free to go check out the Instagram for the series called Crimecast 2020. As a welcome back, so to speak, I'll be letting you guys choose the next topic for the next episode. On Friday, November 13th, the second Friday of the 13th this year, pretty cool, huh? Keep your eyes peeled for a Instagram story to send in your request to kind of choose who or what you want me to talk about next. So be sure to go check that out on Friday, November 13th, and if it's either a popular vote or something interesting, I'll pick it, and yeah. So, as usual, this episode consists of graphic subject matter. If you are uncomfortable with the notion of rape and sexual assault, feel free to click away. If not, let's get started. Well, first, we have to define what is human trafficking. Using the source Homeland Security, it states that human trafficking involves the use of force, fraud, or coercion to obtain some type of labor or commercial sex act. Every year, millions of men, women, and children are trafficked worldwide, including right here in Canada and in the United States. It can happen in any community, and victims can be any age, race, gender, or nationality. Traffickers might use violence, manipulation, or false promises of well-paying jobs or romantic relationships to lure victims into trafficking situations. Language barriers, fear of their traffickers, and/or fear of law enforcement frequently keep victims from seeking help, making human trafficking a hidden crime. Traffickers use force, fraud, or coercion to lure their victims and force them into labor or commercial sexual exploitation. They look for people who are susceptible to a variety of reasons, including psychological or emotional vulnerability, economic hardship, lack of social safety net, natural disasters, or political instability. The trauma caused by traffickers can be so great that many do not identify themselves as victims or seek help, even in highly public settings. Many myths and misconceptions exist around the notion of human trafficking. Let's take a look at the common myths about human trafficking and the facts associated with it. The first myth is that this type of crime only happens to those less fortunate and those who have immigrated. Well, the fact is, human trafficking victims can be any age, race, gender, or nationality. They may come from also any socioeconomic group. Another myth is that human trafficking is only sex work. Well, sex trafficking does exist, but that's not the only type of human trafficking. Forced labor is another type of human trafficking, but both involve the exploitation of people. Victims are found in legitimate and illegitimate labor industries, including sweatshops, massage parlors, agricultural, restaurants, hotels, and domestic service. Another myth is that individuals must be forced into commercial sex acts to be considered a victim of human trafficking. Well, under the U.S. federal law, any minor under the age of 18 who is induced to perform commercial sex act is a victim of human trafficking, regardless whether he or she is forced or coerced. Another myth is human trafficking and human smuggling are the same thing. The fact is, human trafficking is not the same as smuggling. Trafficking is based on exploitation and does not require movement across borders. Smuggling is based on movement and involves a moving person across a country's border with that person's consent in violation of immigration laws. Although human smuggling is very different from human trafficking, Human smuggling can turn into trafficking if the smuggler uses force, fraud, or coercion to hold people against their will for the purposes of labor, or actual sexual exploitation. Under federal law, every minor induced to engage in commercial sex is a victim of human trafficking. The last myth I have is that human trafficking victims will seek help in public situations. The sad fact is that human trafficking is often a hidden crime. Victims may be afraid to come forward and get help. They may be forced or coerced through threats or violence. They may fear retribution from traffickers, including danger to their families, and they may not be in possession or have control of their identification documents. So, now that we're all on the same page about the truth of human trafficking, let's take a look at the indicators of human trafficking. Recognizing key indicators of human trafficking is the first step in identifying victims and can help save a life. Here are several common indicators. First, does the person appear disconnected from family, friends, community, organizations, or houses of worship? Has the child stopped attending school? Has the person had a sudden or dramatic change in behavior? Is a juvenile engaged in commercial sex acts? Is the person disoriented, confused, or showing signs of mental or physical abuse? Does the person have bruises and various stages of healing? Is the person fearful, timid, or submissive? Does the person show signs of having been denied food, water, sleep, or medical care? Is the person often in the company of someone to whom he or she defers, or someone who has been in control of the situation, i.e. where they go or who they talk to? Does the person appear to be coached on what to say? Is the person living in unsustainable conditions? Does the person lack personal possessions and appear to not have a stable living situation? And does the person have freedom of movement? Can the person freely leave where they live, or are there any security measures? Not all indicators listed are present in every human trafficking situation, and the presence or absence of any of these indicators is not necessarily proof of human trafficking. So, now that you know what to look out for, let's take a look at some stories. Here is Maria's story. Every day after school, Maria sold bread by the side of the road to supplement her family's limited income. When business was slow, the 15-year-old chatted with Sophia, a 35-year-old woman who lived in the same Latin American village and often stopped by to visit. The two developed a friendship, and in 2004, Sophia made Maria an offer. She promised a high-paying job in the capital that would allow Maria to send money home and to help pull her family out of poverty. Maria agreed and, at Sophia's urging, did not tell her parents she was leaving. On the day of the trip, Sophia gave Maria a drink that made her dizzy, then unconscious. She awoke. The two of them were in a taxi arriving at an unfamiliar restaurant in the capital. Sophia told Maria to go in and clean up, after which the taxi driver drove her and three other girls to a guest house. The taxi driver called them inside one after another. Maria was the last. Inside the guest house, the taxi driver raped her. Stunned and broken, but feeling powerless to stop what was happening, Maria was brought back to the restaurant, where she was forced to waitress for another month until Sophia returned. At this point, Sophia claimed to be Maria's mother and collect the girl's wages, then relocated her to another restaurant in the city. There, Maria was again forced to wait on tables, but soon the servitude extended to sex, with customers in a back room. Weeks later, the cycle was repeated. Sophia arrived, claimed Maria's earnings, and relocated her, this time to a dancing parlor. Suspicions of Maria and Sophia's relationship the owner of the establishment alerted the authorities, but they took no action. At the dancing parlor, Maria was forced to work, but was not sexually exploited. Maria's salvation finally came when one night her uncle happened to visit the dancing parlor. Recognizing Maria, he informed her parents, who sought assistance from Human Rights Association. The staff from the association freed Maria and filed a criminal suit against the perpetrators in a provincial court. In December 2005, Sophia was sentenced to 10 years in prison and then fined approximately $250, which Maria received as compensation. The taxi driver was not convicted. Despite Maria's testimony, the investigating judge dropped the charges against him because Sophia and Maria made contradictory statements, and Maria was unable to locate the guest house there she was raped. The judge made no attempt to summon the witness from the guest house or restaurant. Could you pick out some of the indicators that could have helped Maria to not accept this offer? Like maybe refusing a job offer from a somewhat stranger? But let's take a look at another story. This story will be Peter's and Kevin's story. Peter, age 25, and Kevin, age 19, both citizens of a northern eastern country, were homeless and unemployed, and they were approached by Edgar. Edgar offered them a construction job, including room and board. The idea of a job and a place to stay seemed heaven-sent, and they quickly agreed. The wages were low but steady, and more than they could have hoped for in their current situation. Edgar put Kevin and Peter up in an old tavern with two other men and sent them to work on construction jobs. He paid them a bit of cash at the end of the day, each day, and brought them food as well. After a short while, he asked if they would like to go to work in a couple of wealthy neighboring countries where there were many construction jobs. Kevin and Peter agreed, as did the other men in the tavern, one of whom was a minor, Jim, a 17-year-old runaway. Kevin and Jim did not have passports, but that did not matter. Edgar got them each a fake one and bought their tickets. Things did not work out in the new countries the way the men had imagined. Again, living in a cramped caravan, something of six of them together, their wages soon shrank to the point where they were earning less in a day than they should have been earning per hour. They were working long days, sometimes 12 to 14 hours, 6 days a week, laying asphalt and doing stonework around private houses. Whenever they were not working, they had to go door to door in residential neighborhoods trying to drum up new business. Edgar shipped them around so much that they had no idea where they were or even which country they were in. He often treated them abusively, shouting at them, hitting them, and even striking them with a spade. He warned that if they would leave, they would be beaten. Kevin tried to run away once, but was quickly found by Edgar and hauled back to the building site. Kevin did not try again. After 3 months, Edgar suddenly went back home, leaving the men behind. Kevin walked all the way up to his national embassy in the capital and appealed for help. Jim also tried to walk and was found by the police and handed over to Child Protection Services. Peter made it to a port in city and tried to buy a ticket home, but was in such a confused condition he had to be helped by police, who opened an investigation into Edgar's activities when they heard his story. In the end, Edgar was convicted of human trafficking for purposes of forced labor. Though all the men had consented to work for him and to go aboard, the court deemed that their labor had been exploited and that they had been in reasonable fear of reprisal if they had to leave their jobs. The fact that they had little money, were dependent on Edgar for room and board, had limited ability to make themselves understood, no real idea of where they were, and, in two cases, false papers, all made in any escape from their circumstances much more difficult. This story highlights that it's not just women that are the victims of human trafficking. And with that, let's take a look at Adeline's story. Adeline was a 15-year-old and who was working as a hairdresser in West Africa. She was befriended by a man a few years older than her and who persuaded her to go to Europe with him, where he told her that hairdressers could earn 50 times as much as what she made at home. They did not get far. They got to a city in a neighboring country, and her quote-unquote boyfriend included her to work as a street prostitute to raise cash for their trip. After a stay there, they began the difficult trip across the desert into a bordering town full of would-be migrants and Adeline. After crossing the border, Adeline's quote-unquote boyfriend, in fact her exploiter, again claimed they were short of money for the onward journey to Europe. This time, he left Adeline in the care of a migration broker while he returned home to their home country, or so he claimed, to raise more money. Initially, Adeline suspected nothing, but when she tried to leave the broker's lodge, she was seized and thoroughly beaten for breaking the rules. It was then that Adeline learned that her exploiter had in fact sold her to the broker and that she would have to pay the impossible sum of 5,000 US dollars for her freedom. Her quote-unquote purchase price plus the cost she had incurred while at the broker's camp. She was told that she, like the other 20 to 30 girls in the broker's custody, would have to work as a prostitute to pay off her so-called debt and buy her freedom. While held by a broker, Adeline was repeatedly abused, raped, and forced to serve as a prostitute. Usually her clients used no condoms. She longed to return home, yet she was ashamed of what had happened to her. Eventually, she managed to secretly telephone her younger sister and relate her predicament to her. In turn, her sister reported the police in her hometown. When official attempts to rescue Adeline failed, Adeline's father scrapped up the money demanded by the broker and purchased her freedom. Adeline's exploiter was arrested and charged after several weeks of surveillance, but was acquitted on the grounds that it could not be proved beyond reasonable doubt that Adeline had been sold. So, human trafficking is a broad crime, from labor to exploiting sex to just straight up manipulation. So, how can anyone really be safe? Well, let's take a look at some of the ways to protect yourself against these situations. General exploitation is the treatment of a person unfairly to benefit from their work. Exploitation can involve the use of threats, manipulation, or force to get someone to do something they do not want to do for the benefit of another person. It can take many forms. It could look like an employer forcing an employee to work for little or no pay, or it could look like a romantic partner threatening harm if their partner doesn't perform sex acts or money or drugs or a place to stay. So, a few things to look out for. You would want to look out for false job pretenses, like Maria, Peter, and Kevin fell victim to. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Be wary of offers for jobs in fields that are typically hard to break into, such as modeling and acting, or offers in remote locations in faraway states or foreign cities. Dangerous individuals may lure victims into isolation away from their friends or family. Indicators of a false job promise could include the payment and the job description do not seem to match. For example, a high hourly salary for a typical low-paying job. Number two, the employer doesn't request any information about your previous work experience. Number three, the employer asks for a photo of you as part of the application process. Four, the employer asks a lot of personal questions about you that are not relevant to the potential job. Five, the employer requests a substantial fee to cover the cost of uniforms or other expenses. And six, the employer asks you to keep the job a secret or a lie about your age. Another thing to look out for is the false promises of love. Individuals looking to exploit others will use emotional, mental, and financial support to gain trust and build dependency in potential victims. Indicators of a potentially exploitative relationship include if your partner demands that you tell them where you are at all times, makes you ask for permission to leave the home or socialize with others, limits your communication with friends, family, and loved ones, threatens to hurt you or your loved ones if you do not know what they say, holds on to your identification cards or other personal documents or money, makes you feel unsafe to be around them, provides you with financial support that requires you to ask for money when you need it, makes you work at a job where you do not receive your own paycheck, and forces you to perform in sex acts for them or others for money or in exchange for other items of value, like drugs. So besides work and love, you should also be careful online. Individuals looking to exploit others can gain access to potential victims online because they are not always aware of how dangerous online environments can be or how to keep themselves safe. They oftentimes actively stalk online meeting places like social media sites to lure their victims. Here are some common safety tips to keep in mind while online and using social media. Do not share any personal information, like where you live, work, go to school, or details about your personal life. Make sure to set your profile to private so only your friends in real life get access. Never accept a friend request from someone you don't know in real life. Do not share your photos with anyone that you wouldn't be comfortable with your parents, guardians, or friends seeing. If you do share a photo and someone uses it to threaten or blackmail you, you do have options. Talk to a trusted adult about how to protect yourself or get help. If you plan to meet with someone you met online in person, it should be in a public setting, like a restaurant or coffee shop, and let a trusted friend know who and where and when you are meeting. Do your research on a job offer that seems too good to be true by reading reviews on company rating websites or reaching out to current or past employees to validate the information about the job. If someone isn't who they seem to be, or you think you are being lured into a potentially exploitive situation, tell a trusted adult. Reporting the person could help stop them from potentially exploiting other people. And finally, trust your instincts. If something feels wrong about the conversation you are having with someone online, stop the conversation and block the profile. It's that easy. But more generally, just remember to be vigilant about your surroundings, avoid walking home alone, act swiftly if you get suspicious, do not trust strangers, use your social media wisely, be ready for anything, make sure to use your phone, like let the people closest to you know where you are at all times, and always meet strangers in public and know where to get help. So now that you've kind of seen what makes up human trafficking, what to look out for, some of the stories of how that can come across, I want to present to you the horrifying tale of Carla Jantico with her story produced by CNN. Carla Jantico, by her own estimate of 43,200, is the number of times she was raped after falling into the hands of human traffickers. She says up to 30 men a day, 7 days a week, for the best part of 4 years, so that would be 43,200. Her story highlights the brutal realities of human trafficking in Mexico and in the United States, an underworld that has destroyed the lives of tens of thousands of Mexican girls like Carla. Human trafficking has become a trade so lucrative and prevalent that it knows no borders and links towns to central Mexico with cities like Atlanta and New York. U.S. and Mexican officials both point to a town in central Mexico that for years has been a major source of human trafficking rings and a place where victims are taken before eventually forced into prostitution. The town is called, okay, bear with me here, Tianxico, Mexico, a breeding ground for traffickers. Even though it has a population of about 13,000, it has an oversized reputation when it comes to prostitution and pimping. Mistreated from the age of 5, Carla says she was abused for as long as she can remember and felt rejected by her mother. She says she came from a dysfunctional family. She was sexually abused and mistreated from the age of 5 by a quote-unquote relative. When she was 12, she was targeted by a trafficker who lured her away using kind words in a fast car. She says she was waiting for some friends near a subway station in Mexico City when a little boy selling sweets came up to her, telling her somebody was sending her a piece of candy as a gift. 5 minutes later, Carla says an old man was telling her that he was a used car salesman. The initial awkwardness disappeared as soon as the man started telling her that he too was abused as a boy and that he was very affectionate and quite a gentleman. They exchanged phone numbers, and when he called a week later, Carla says she got excited. He asked her to go on a trip nearby Puebla, Puebla. P-U-E-B-L-A, sorry, with him, and dazzled her by showing up driving in a bright red F-hybrid Trans Am. I guess that's some kind of car. Hope I said that right to all you car guys out there. It didn't take long for the man, who, at 22, was 10 years older than Carla, to convince her to leave with him, especially after Carla's mother didn't open the door one night when she came home a little too late. Carla remembers the following day she left with him. She lived with him for 3 months, during which he treated her very well. She says that he loved me. He bought me clothes, gave me attention, brought me shoes, flowers, chocolates. Everything was beautiful. But there were red flags everywhere. Carla says her boyfriend would leave her by herself for a week in their apartment. His cousins would show up with new girls every week. And when she finally mustered the courage to ask what business they were in, he told her the truth. "They're pimps," he said. A few days later, he started telling Carla everything she had to do, the positions, how much she needed to charge, the things she had to do with the client and for how long, how she was to treat them and how she had to talk to them to give them more money. This was the beginning of 4 years of hell. The first time she was forced to work as a prostitute, she was taken to, okay, here's another big city name, Guadalajara, Guadalajara, one of Mexico's largest cities. She started at 10 a.m. and finished at midnight. They were in the city for a week, do the math, 20 per day for a week. Carla said that some men would laugh at her because she was crying, and she had to close her eyes so she wouldn't see what they were doing to her, and so that she wouldn't feel anything. There would be several other cities. She would be sent to brothels, roadside motels, streets known for prostitution, and even homes. There were no holidays or days off, and after the first few days, she was made to see at least 30 customers a day, 7 days a week. Carla tells how she was attacked by her trafficker after a John gave her a hickey. "He started beating me with a chain in all of my body. He punched me with his fists. He kicked me, pulled my hair, spat at me in the face. And that day was when he also burned me with the iron. I told him I wanted to leave, and he was accusing me of falling in love with a customer. He told me I was acting like a whore." That's what Carla had to say. One day, when she was working at a hotel known for prostitution, police showed up. They kicked out all of the customers, Carla says, and shut down the hotel. She thought it was her lucky day. A police operation to rescue her and the other girls. Her relief quickly turned to horror when the officers, about 30 she says, took the girls to several rooms and started shooting videos of them in compromising positions. The girls were told the videos would be sent to their families if they didn't do everything they asked. I thought they were disgusting. They knew we were minors. We were not even developed. We had sad faces. There were girls who were only 10 years old. There were girls who were crying. They told the officers they were minor and nobody paid attention, Carla says. She was 13 years old at the time. In her nightmare world, even a pregnancy was the cause for horror, not joy. Carla gave birth at 15 to a girl, a baby fathered by the pimp who would use the daughter to tighten the noose around her neck. If she didn't fulfill his every wish, he would either harm or kill the baby. He took the baby away from her a month after the baby was born, and she was not allowed to see her again until the girl was more than a year old. Carla Jantito was finally rescued in 2008 during an anti-trafficking operation in Mexico City. Her ordeal lasted 4 very long and tormenting years. She still was a minor, only 16 when it ended, but she had endured a lifetime of horror that will stay with her as long as she lives. CNN has independently verified portions of Carla's story. They have spoken with the United Against Human Trafficking group she was referred to after being rescued, and to senior officials at the Road Home, a shelter where Carla lived for 1 year after her rescue. Due to the clandestine nature of human trafficking business, corroborating everything Carla told us is impossible. Carla is now 23 years old. She's become an outspoken advocate against human trafficking, telling her story at conferences and public events. She told her story to Pope Francis on July at the Vatican. She also told the U.S. Congress in May. Her testimony was used as evidence in support for H.R. 515, or Megan's Law, that mandates U.S. authorities to share information pertaining to American child sex offenders when these convict attempts to travel aboard. Her message is that human trafficking and forced prostitution still happens and is a gnawing problem in our world. Carla says, these minors are being abducted, lured, and yanked away from their families. Don't just listen to me. You need to learn about what happened to me and take the blindfold off your eyes. Doing nothing, she says, puts countless girls at risk of being trafficked for years and raped tens of thousands of times. Just like she was. Her story, like the stories of others, show the full detriment of what can happen. But let's take a look at what Canada's doing about this worldwide crisis. Currently, Nova Scotia has the highest rate of human trafficking incidents in Canada, with 2.1 victims for every 100,000 people, according to a statement from the provincial government. Despite strong laws and global protocols, human trafficking generates around $150 billion in profits worldwide annually. This proportionality impacts women and children. In Canada, 95% of the police-identified victims are women and girls. Since 2015, the Government of Canada has responded by investing multi-year funding in over 500 organizations working to address and prevent all forms of gender-based violence and promote gender equality. Across the country, over 1,000 sexual assault centers and organizations that combat gender-based violence have been supported with emergency funding to continue to operate and provide essential services safely through the COVID-19 pandemic. In September 2019, the Government of Canada has launched the new Comprehensive National Strategy to Combat Human Trafficking. It's a national strategy, a whole-of-government approach that brings together federal efforts and is supported by an investment of $57.22 million over a five-year and $10.28 million ongoing. This builds on previous investments of $14.51 million over 5 years and $2.89 million per year to establish the Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline, which launched in May 2019, as well as ongoing work across the Government of Canada to combat human trafficking. The National Strategy to Combat Human Trafficking builds on complements and the efforts of Canada's strategy to prevent and address gender-based violence and advances in the implementation of national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls calls for justice. Finally, I do want to end this episode where you can get help or report anything suspicious. You can call the Human Trafficking Hotline, which is a toll-free hotline, at 1-833-900-1010. That was 1-833-900-1010. Hotline response associates are also available 24/7, 365 days a year to receive tips for potential human trafficking. Instead of calling, you can also submit a tip at www.CanadianHumanTraffickingHotline.ca/submit-a-tip/ or just CanadianHumanTraffickingHotline.ca. Human trafficking is a horrible scenario that anyone can find themselves in. Please remember the indicators of false pretenses of love and work, and to be safe online. Once more, remember to be vigilant of your surroundings, avoid walking alone, act swiftly if suspicious, do not trust strangers, use social media wisely, be ready for anything, use your phone, like letting the people closest to you know where you are, always meet strangers in public, and know where to get help. I just want to say thank you so much for listening today, and I hope you learned how to be safe and what to watch out for. Make sure to view Crimecast 2020's Instagram on Friday the 13th to submit your request on who or what I talk about. See you all in 2 weeks!